Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I was thinking about coming out of the shoot here and telling y'all about my new boots that I got on, but y'all want to talk about puppy chow?
What is that, ostrich?
Hell no, that's python.
It's Sterney's Daily.
Before we get to that boner.
On The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Today's Dirty Daily is powered by all of our tremendous veterans that we are so thankful for. To all the veterans out there today, thank you for your service. Thank you for your sacrifice. Happy Veterans Day from me, from all of us here at The Drive, and all of us here at Sports Radio 610, something that we should celebrate every day, but thankful for the reminder to celebrate today and honor you guys. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Can't thank you enough again for all the sacrifice and all the effort and time invested in serving this great country. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Appreciate you powering my Dirties Daily today. I am honored. And also, I want to remind everybody out there, all the veterans can come hang as well. We will be on the road again this Thursday and this Friday, as we always are, road tripping with The Drive Thursday and Friday. Buffalo Wild Wings, Thirsty Thursday. What the hell? What do you know, y'all? We up Tomball way again.
There we go.
17195 Tomball Parkway. I think we've been there a time or two, but we shall see. Whichever one of Buffalo Wild Wings it is always popping when we are there. And, wow, Football Friday.
Yeah,
I'm excited about this one, man. Boomer Jacks.
I enjoyed Boomer Jacks.
Yeah, Boomer Jacks Grill. This time we are down Webster Way. We're not in Katy, so we're down Webster Way. I wonder if the Webster Boomer Jacks is going to jump the same way that the Katy location jumps. It's going to be a good one, man. So Buffalo Wild Wings up Tomball.
I don't know that I've been to Webster.
We have.
We maybe have.
Yeah, we have. I think there's a Twin Peaks down there. I think we went to.
Twin Peaks location you can go to.
Have we been to that one?
It's been a while since we've been down there, but we have been down there once or twice. It is a great location. But you've been down Webster Way.
I've been to Webster? Okay.
Webster. Yeah, you've been down that way like a time or two. But either way it goes, everybody out there listening, tell your friends, tell your family, come hang out Thirsty Thursday, Football Friday. We typically give away tickets. There's not a home game, so we'll give away tickets to a future home game, I'm sure, along with all kinds of Bud Light stuff on Thursday. We got some, we've had HEB gift cards. We've had Academy gift cards. We've got, like I said, tickets. We got oil changes. We got all kind of stuff rocking and rolling Thursday and Friday. Come hang out. But today is Tape Drop Tuesday. And I think this is definitely, no doubt about it, my favorite film that I've watched in 2025, Ron. But it'll rival the film of like the monster game CJ Stroud had against Tampa Bay back. Is that last year or 2 years ago?
2 years ago.
You know, there's a handful of games out there that were not only big wins for the organization, but they were dramatic down to the end, down to the last second, big-time quarterback performances. I'm going to tell you, man, this one ranks right up there with the best that I've analyzed and observed over my years here in Houston. Obviously, Deshaun Watson had some freakish performances with that Texans offense and that Texans unit, but this defense and how dominant they are, along with what happened for the offense late, was a Tape Drop Tuesday to remember. And I'm going to tell you, this one starts with Nick Caley. And I'm going to tell you, Nick Caley was absolutely elite on Sunday. And I know I use capital letters, E-L-I-T-E.
Use that E word.
He was big time, as good as any there as there is out there this past Sunday against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I'm talking about the entire game. I'm not talking about just in the fourth quarter, right? When you talk about the preparation, having guys like Trent Brown and Jarrett Patterson and Davis Mills and having those guys ready and prep that haven't played a lot of football for the Texans this year is an achievement in itself. The plan, I thought the plan for Jacksonville was tremendous. The adjustments along the way, tremendous. The feel throughout the game of what direction to go was tremendous. The timing of certain play calls was really, really, really good. And as I said, I think the big key here, Ron, for me is that everybody knows, hell, everybody was great down the stretch. The quarterback was good. Yeah. The play caller was good. The pass catchers were good. The defense was tremendous. Everybody knows that, right? But the part I want to stress about Nick Caley is Nick was really good from jump. You look at the first interception that was thrown in the first drive. Not only was that an interception, great play by the defense. They jumped an underneath route. But there were two guys open on the bang routes over the top of the control routes underneath that would have been huge chunk plays, if not touchdowns. You look at the fact that the Texans went out there and ended up, how many points they ended up scoring, Ron? 36 points, 29 from the offense. Yeah. And you look at that, 29 offensive points. And there were a lot of plays left on the field. There was the Higgins cross, ended up throwing it away inside the 10-yard line, threw it away to Nico Collins. There were three guys covering him. Higgins is busted wide open on the left. And just a mesh concept that's an easy read. Not sure how Davis didn't kick his eyes back to that read. I mentioned that the two chunk plays that would have been either chunk plays or touchdowns right there with the interception. I know there was a miss on a corner route to Nico Collins late. There was a miss to Nico Collins on a corner route to the right, which I don't know if Nico came out looking over the wrong shoulder or if the quarterback threw it over the wrong shoulder. It was a miss that would have been a touchdown. There were a couple of throws underneath the drop by by Dalton Schultz that would have been a huge conversion, right? There was a ball that was thrown a little bit early on Dalton Schultz over the middle, similar to the one that was last week that would have been there. I mean, when you talk about calling plays that offer your quarterback throwing the ocean touchdowns. I don't remember watching a game, Ron, where there was this many. Because then you turn around and you go, well, they threw a touchdown to Dalton Schultz. Well, they threw a touchdown to Higgins. You know, it's like there was also, oh, you didn't hit that one? Okay, well, let me dial up another one for you multiple times. And I just can't say enough about Nick Caley, the plays that were drawn up. We haven't even mentioned the big plays, the third down conversion that Dalton Schultz did catch, man-to-man, he's running away, great call. The throw out of halftime to Jalen Noel was a big-time throw. I loved I don't remember if they were drive starters or second or third down, but the half sprint where he's throwing a hitch to Nico Collins or the half sprint where he's throwing a stack route to Higgins versus a soft corner. I love taking that for sure money right there. And they haven't done that all year. And Ron, the another thing about Nick Caley is the way that when they got rolling, it would have been, we've seen this happen this year, right? And I don't know if it's Nick Caley or CJ, but you get frustrated and all of a sudden you just throw four go routes on four straight downs and you waste a series, right? What I thought Nick Caley and Davis Mills did really well was, boom, drive a little bit higher risk throw down the middle of the field to Nico Collins. You hit it, bang, right? Don't come back and all of a sudden start taking shots because you get excited, just slow back down, throw the snag, throw the roll, half roll, throw the hitch, right? Throw a little bootleg to Jalen Noel in the flats. Like the way that he used the quick game, the mid-range game, the shot plays, it ended up working out beautifully on Nick Caley's front in several ways, man. It was, by the way, the run game getting going late, staying committed to the run game and doing that thing right there was impressive as well. Yeah. Inside, outside run. Sometimes the O-line blocked it up really well. Sometimes the running back bounced it and made a play. Sometimes the scheme was an advantage. Sometimes it wasn't. it was an impressive offensive performance Sunday.
Can they make this a weekly occurrence? That's the big thing. Can Nick Caley, is this a deal of Nick Caley starting to progress and understand maybe his team or whatnot? Because I think it is impressive when you look at, you know, what he didn't have available to him to come forth with what you believe is his best performance as an offensive coordinator of the season, and that be without his starting quarterback and what was his two best offensive linemen out of the game, still being able to put forth that type of performance. Can he repeat it? That's
the question. I thought Denver, the film was a lot better than the 15-point performance. Backup quarterback, obviously, you know, having to come in and off the bench. And you know, I thought the quarterback and the play calling was better than 15 points last week. But it is what it is. You scored 15 points. I thought this was a great build from last week's loss to Denver. If I stack up the wins for the Texans, right? I think this Jacksonville is without a doubt the best win that the Texans have on their schedule so far. I know the San Francisco game is probably going to look better on paper because people are going to forget that everybody was injured. People are going to forget that film, they just weren't very good up front, and we were able to hold them off the quarterback in an impressive fashion. Baltimore, I think that is what it is. I think everybody knows they were missing seven Pro Bowlers, and the guys they did roll out there just flat out quit. So it was this is the best win for the Texans. For me, Ron, this is a game when I turned the film on. I'll be honest, I thought Baltimore was better than it was. I turned the film on and I was like, boom. All the air came out of my system.
Like,
oh man, it wasn't.
They packed it in.
Yeah. And then San Francisco, same thing. I thought, boy, that's a good win, man. 5-win, 6-win team. I watched the film, I was like, golly, man, that defense was brutal, man, up front. You turn the film on, and I walked away from the film going, boy, the Texans took it to them. That was a good front, not a great front. That was a good defense, not a great defense. But the Texans really took it to them. And as the score would tell you, it was just in the second half, when reality was, I'm telling you, there was a lot there to love in the first half as well. So, Ron, I only say that to say to answer your question of, you know, is this something that we can really rely on? I don't know.
We'll see. Yeah, moving week after week, but
yeah, but that's 2 weeks of what I would say is Nick Caley moving in a positive direction, right? The he and the quarterback. I bet between C.J. Stroud missing Woody Marks in that brief stint there, and then the two or three misses that we outlined of Davis Mills versus Denver after he came in. And then the two or three misses that were touched. I mean, hell, I bet he's dialed up five or six touchdowns or huge chunk plays that have been left on the field by the quarterback in one way or another. Now, if those guys get to hitting on the same all on the same cylinder, then you know maybe he gets better. But we'll see. That's 2 weeks of positive, I think, movement in the right direction for Nick Caley. We'll see what that is. Just to put a bow on that, Ron, I think the second half offensive product against the Jacksonville Jaguars was the best offensive product that we've seen this year. And overall, I thought the second half quarterback play was the best quarterback play that we've seen in 2025 by a Houston Texan. That was impressive.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that was impressive. The overall package was truly beautiful. Now, I want to move to the defense real quick, Ron. We're going to get on that O-line a little later, but I'm going to move this defense real quick. This is a serious question. Who in the league right now is playing better than 55 on the defensive side of the ball?
Certainly not last week. Nobody better than him last week. He was a absolute game wrecker.
I mean, he's in the what is he in the top eight? He's in the top eight anyway, right? I mean, just generally speaking, game to game, week to week. Top eight edges.
Probably top 10, definitely. I mean, he only had four sacks coming into the game. He really went off. We'll see. I wonder if he'll be defensive player of the week.
Gotta
in
be
in the AFC.
Gotta
be. He was unblockable.
It gotta be. And here's the deal. I mean, he is. I mean, if you have any way to watch film, watch highlights. I mean, that damn tackle. Really, the whole offensive line. But that poor tackle, 72, I think it was. Good God, he's got to be questioning his manhood today.
Walker Little.
No, this was. I think Walker came out and he came back. This was a white dude.
Oh, he
Walker's a black dude, ain't he?
No, I think Walker Little's white.
I thought Walker Little was black. This is a white dude. 72, I think, is who I'm talking about.
Yeah,
it was
Walker
a rough.
Little. Yeah.
Hey, look, whether 72, white dude. If his name's Walker, last name Little, it's your ass then.
That's Walker Little.
Yeah, Walker Little. He's whiter than all get out. You're right. Hell, he got to have a little ginger in him. But yeah, no. It, well, who,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
that
yeah,
may
be a little
him.
Confused. I said, hold on, Walker.
Isn't there? Is it, there is a little out there, that offensive lineman that's a black dude, though.
I don't know. It may be a little out there,
absolutely.
But I don't know a lot of
a good
black,
one.
I don't know a lot of black parents going Walker.
It's a good call. Great call. Whoever it was, his
maybe
ass.
There was a Texas Walker, Texas Ranger fan.
Hey, whoever it was, his ass got destroyed, and he is really questioning whether this is his career path or not. Kamari Lassiter, y'all, I do want to hit on this before we. I'm gonna tell you, man, and this isn't anything that anybody doesn't know or hasn't seen. Kamari Lassiter may be my favorite Houston Texan to watch on film. And that's saying a lot. When you got Stingley and when you got Will Anderson and you got Daniil Hunter, Nico Collins, when you got those kind of guys, it's saying a lot. I'm telling you, man, coming out of halftime, when he's to the left of the quarterback and the quarterback throws a screen to his right and he goes over there, it looks like it's going to be a big play, and he goes over and stops for like a 5 or 6 yard gain. I mean, the change of pace, the way he comes from the other side of the field, eyes in the backfield, sees the screen, tracks the ball, tracks the player, and somehow, I mean, it looks like he's shot out of a cannon when he sees, okay, you watch like an old a Nat Geo where there's a lion or some kind of jaguar or something that's cheetah or something
just
that's
takes
like
off.
He's just creeping on his prey, and then when he decides to go, it's like he shot out of it. That was Kamari Lassiter on that damn screenplay. And then the play where he rolls over there and he hits his head on the damn bench, gets pushed out of bounds and hits his head on the bench. I mean, just the get up and get your ass back on the field, avoid all confrontation, don't lay there like you're hurt, get your ass up, and then avoid all confrontation. Don't get into some lip-smacking contest with all these dudes. By the way, that's what you got to stop in the NFL, for the record, is when these guys get pushed into the sideline, like the guys on the bench who ain't doing nothing, swarming that player that's on the ground. Like, you got to stop that. He avoided all that and got back on the field, man. I posted both of those on my Twitter account, man, if you want to go see those. Those are along with that top offensive play that I think I've seen all year long. I posted all those on my Twitter at Clint Sterner if you want to go check them out. Kamari Lassiter is becoming, he ain't become, he is. He's my favorite Texan player to watch on film.
Yeah, he's something else. Shout out to Walker Douglas Little and the text line. He's from around the corner, Bel Air.
Is he?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Sorry about that fella from around the corner. Danica,
he might have family listening here. Could you imagine if he got some family listening and one of his uncles or somebody saying, no, I'm gonna tell you right now, Walker ain't black.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna tell you right now, I mean, looking at Walker, I don't think he even has one black uncle either.
No, I'm telling you, any of his uncles listening right now say,
oh, I know who you're talking about
right now. Yeah.
No, yeah, call him in there, that damn Sterner boy. Hey, Sterner, you crazy. He ain't, oh, he's whiter than all get out.
Come on now.
I'm gonna tell you, there is a offensive lineman in the NFL with the last name Little.
Oh, there might be a black. Last name Little.
And he's a good one too.
First name
or
Walker,
was.
I don't know. Yeah, somebody texted and said, Greg Little, is that who you're talking
that's
about?
That's exactly who I'm talking about.
Is it?
Yes, that's exactly who I'm talking about. Greg, I did not think 72 was a little. Needless to say.
Walker Little, I was going to say he's their left tackle.
Hey, Daniil Hunter punished his ass.
Yeah, he did. Take it a deep
breath. Sorry about that, Mom and Dad.
Yeah.
Just being honest.
It's that pissed off uncle. See you at Buffalo Wild Wings. Coming to dress us. All right, coming up, some potential Astros rumors. I feel like many people will go this way, but I would like you to just sit and think about it just a bit. We'll discuss that next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hubley.
All right, some Astros news, as a hot stove will be upon us before you know it. Bob Nightingale, Hotel Lobby Bobby, Two Chains, Solid Veneers. He did, man.
I never knew Bobby Two Chains had veneers.
You don't remember when he sat down? Yeah, man, it wasn't his. It was white, dog. Too white and too big.
All at a perfect right angle.
Teeth don't match his age.
Yeah, man.
Or his drinking habits.
Look like a closet full of white teas.
Glass of cranberry vodka.
Yeah, that's him. Just a splash, though. No, he talked about Christian Walker, and he said reportedly Houston will gladly listen to trade offers regarding Christian Walker in advance to the 2026 season. The eagerness is sensible on multiple fronts with Christian Walker. And we've kind of heard that from many people around here. Like, yeah, they've got a surplus there in the infield. There are a lot of guys there they have under contract. And you're trying to figure out, all right, where is Isak Paredes going to play? Where is Correa going to play? You got Walker. You got Altuve. You got a lot of pieces there in the infield. And
don't
a thought
about them catchers now.
Yeah.
I ain't sure Diaz don't end up at first base.
Shoot, well, he's throwing it. He better be throwing it right now. He better be somewhere getting 500 throws a day.
He'll be scooping it.
But they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with that. And listen, we had conversations, Clint, of like, you know, like, God, it is weird. I mean, he did lead the team in home runs and RBIs, and I'm not going to say that he was great. And I know baseball's stats are looked at differently a little bit now that are more important than home runs and RBIs. I still think driving in runs and hitting the ball over the wall is a big deal. But I think you would look at this, and to me, obviously, I think he is dealing with his predecessor. He is dealing with the issues of the previous guy who signed a similar contract as him, who had struggles in his first year to not live up to what he was when they got him, and he's aging. He'll be 35 in March. And I'm just, by eye test, Tyler and Clint and the listener, 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch, when you watch Christian Walker, do you get the feeling that you had when you watched Jose Abreu after year one?
Like, Hell no.
Do you feel like he's cooked or getting too cooked? I don't get that feel either.
It wasn't fun to watch, but it wasn't vomit worthy.
But I feel like that's how some people view Christian Walker is. This is another Pena, or I'm sorry, this is another Jose Abreu, and we got to get out of this. And we got to get out of this because,
well, no, look, I think that what Christian
Jose,
Walker,
by the way, he was 18 and 90. Like,
well,
18.
What Christian Walker had, the problem that Christian Walker had was he was coming in, two problems. Number one, he was coming in on the heels of the organization having thrown a bunch of money at a veteran and him completely falling off a cliff. Number one. Number two, he was coming in when two of the more productive middle of the lineup bats were exiting.
Yes.
And so Tucker and Bregman leaving, all of a sudden you've got a guy that, hey, at first base, you're being compared to Abreu, right? Hell, you can even go back to as far as what was Pineapple's name?
Yuli.
Yuli.
Giddy up.
There you go. His last
still
year.
Playing, by the way.
His last year wasn't great until the playoffs. And so, like, there was some PTSD there, as well as some elevated expectations with who he was trying to replace in the lineup. And so, I think he's probably viewed through a skewed lens there quite a bit.
Astros fans are desperate, man. We haven't had a first baseman hit since Yuli.
Yeah, look,
it's been a while.
Yeah.
I understand the thought of, like, all right, man, we've got, like, let's move Paredes over there. Let's, like, we've got too many guys, and maybe he's the one that you look at is the worst of the crew of how he played last year. But, like, I don't know. I wonder what a year two from Christian Walker looks like, right? Like, I mean, 2 years ago, his slash line, 251, 335 on base, 468 slug, 26 home runs, 84 RBIs. Last year, 238, 297, which is a real drop in his on-base percentage. And then 421 slug, 27 home runs, led team, 88 RBIs, led the team. His WAR really dropped because defensively he didn't make the impact that he had before. I don't know. I just I look at this and I'm just like, well, I don't think he's done. I don't watch Christian Walker and think he's done. I think Christian Walker pressed. Along with what you said, I think Christian Walker also became much more of a focal point in the lineup with not only Bregman and Tucker out, but Yordan missed, you know, 100 and however many games, right? And so he was asked to jump up in there. I don't know, man. I just This doesn't at all feel like an Abreu situation where you got to get out of it. And I don't know if he's going to come in and hit, you know, what he was 2 years ago. But, I mean, I think he can definitely be a productive player. I don't know how much I love it being like, all right, man, he's got to be, you know, somebody that we count on the way we count on, you know, Jordan. But I don't know, man. It's an odd thing. If they can get it done and get Paredes in and get somebody to pay, I guess it makes sense. But like I think Christian Walker has a solid to good season next year. I think he's a pro, and I don't think he's losing it. All right, coming up, Clint talked about watching the film, seeing what the Texans did, especially being impressed from an offensive perspective. What about that offensive line? You will not want to miss where Clint is now after watching the film and watching that game with the Texans offensive line. He believes maybe there's a problem. Maybe there's a controversy. We'll discuss that next.
Now, Kathy Bates, that's bad bitch right there.
I don't know how long.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right. Sorry. Welcome back in to The Drive as we continue to roll through here. Remember, Clint, Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 is presented by Paramount Plus, streaming November 16. That's coming. I can't wait. On Paramount Plus, The Return of Landman from Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone, Academy Award winner Billy Bob Thornton. What a great role he played when he won that award with Halle Berry. Featuring Academy Award nominee Demi Moore, Andy Garcia, Sam Elliott, Landman. New season streaming November 16th only on Paramount Plus. Now I come think about it. Is that what he won the Oscar for?
Which one was it?
That movie where he just broke off Halle Berry. She won the Oscar for that. What? Is that what he, or was it Sling Blade? Which, is that what it was?
I'm going to double check, but I would guess Sling Blade.
I like the way you talk.
I don't mean to step off in it, but that was aggressive, that scene.
Which one?
Billy Bob Thornton and Halle Berry. That was one where, like, I'm like, I don't know how y'all didn't just do it a little bit.
You don't think it was real? You don't think they did?
I mean, I feel like they did. Yeah. I feel
he
like
taped it to his belly button.
Man, it was just too. It was. Let me get off of that before I jump in there. But Landman. Can't wait for that. Somebody texted and said Sling Blade. Yeah, that may have been it. Hallie won. I think she won just for the scene. It was impressive, to say the least, for both of them. Wow. So we didn't see a lot of Hallie at that time. She gave us a little bit in Swordfish, and then, anyway. And I'm like, okay, Angelina, I get it. Anyway, I'm sorry.
I was tracking with you the whole way, though, timeline.
I mean, I think Brad was intimidated. All right. D'Amico said this yesterday when he spoke to the media about his offensive line, and I feel like Clint, like you really, especially the tail end, what he had to say, you really kind of at least are thinking about maybe where he is at. Here is D'Amico yesterday talking about his offensive line.
Yeah, overall in protection, I thought they did a really nice job. Davis had time all day, you know. Starting off, we had to get some things corrected. It wasn't up to our standards, so we had to make changes, get it fixed. And once we got those fixed, I feel like the guys did a really good job of battling. Still things to clean up, sure. But for overall, man, I thought Tay Trent did a really nice job on the edges, protecting it well. We had a couple zero pressures that kind of got us. We got to communicate better on, you know, our mic points and those things, make sure everybody's on the same page. But overall, you talk about a game protection-wise versus a really good front, our guys did a great job.
That was D'Amico talking about the O-line. He also went on to discuss this about maybe how they move forward with the offensive line.
Yeah, for the offensive line, we'll continue to find, you know, what works for us and, you know, the best guys that we can put out there. We're going to try that. You know, and it's a culmination of a lot of things that you guys don't see, from practice, from how we've seen guys work throughout the week, how they're doing. It's with the mental being where they're supposed to be doing the things that we asked them to do on a consistent basis. Like, a lot of things go into play there. So still a lot of things that we can clean up, a lot of things just with our entire team. We can just be more consistent on doing the things that we're asked to do. And till we're going to keep moving guys around till we find the right group that's going to do it the right way, do what we're asking them to do every single time that they're out there.
All right. They said they're going to keep looking, Clint, keep trying to figure out the best combination of guys that go on that offensive line. And you would hope that maybe Ed Ingram is back with the knee and that Titus Howard may be back with that concussion. If they get back, Clint, you think there's at least a conversation to be had on what the five should be out there?
Yeah, look, he put a strong emphasis on we're going to continue to find the right five that'll do what we're asking them to do every time, every play out there. So, I mean, there's clearly a hidden, you know, point there from the head coach of, like, clearly there's not guys out there. The only way a P-squad guy gets activated and Juice Scruggs goes to the bench and Lakin Tomlinson gets no run is if somebody's not doing what he's asked to do. But, yes, to answer your question, Ron, I think – I'm going to tell you, from watching the tape, I think the controversy on this team could be on who your offensive line is week to week. And I'm not talking about City Sal. I'm talking about your legit, who are your best five offensive linemen, and most notably, who is your right tackle? Because I'm going to tell you right now, Trent Brown, I love the thought of Trent Brown goes in at right tackle, leaves Blake Fisher to play his, you know, the heavy tight end role and the jumbo stuff. And so I expected that. We talked about it multiple times last week. But I did not expect to see Trent Brown play as well as Trent Brown played. There's several parts of his game that I think, you know, at the end of the day, Trent Brown displays abilities that nobody else in a Texans uniform has and that Titus Howard does not bring to the table. Now, I don't know if it's sheer size, because he is a huge dude, even relative to NFL standards.
He's a big man.
He's got heavy hands, you know, the old man strength. Maybe he knows the offense a little bit better and he's playing more confidently. But I'm going to tell you, there's several things throughout this game film when you're watching Trent Brown that I've not seen it from anybody else in a Texans uniform. His ability, we hear D'Amico Ryans talk about displacing defensive tackles.
That's one of his favorites.
I'm telling you. And again, I don't know if it's size, strength, or what, but Trent Brown has the ability to do that. He can take and clear a hole completely and give a running back room when he blocks down on a defensive tackle. He has the ability to do that. He is really crafty, if you want to call it. Maybe it's, again, the old man strength. When he's working double teams, he is physical in the double teams, and he is very good at passing off the players so he can then go to the next level and not leaving that other offensive lineman in a bad spot, right? He moves the player, the defensive player, enough for the guard to get his feet underneath him and to get in position to where that guy now has the D-tackle block so he can move on. He's really good in that. Again, probably has to do with how big he is and how he can lean on people. In pass protection, the ability, when he gets his mitts on somebody, on their chest plate, it's a wrap. It's over. They stop in their tracks. Like, and I'm not saying he's going to be that way against everybody. I'm simply telling you right now that Trent Brown, the tape versus the Jacksonville Jaguars, he displayed abilities and skills that no other Texans offensive lineman has displayed that I've seen this year. And it comes in physicality. It comes in brute strength. It comes in just being a significantly bigger human being than the guys you're playing against. And that is extremely, extremely valuable. And so it begs the question of, should Trent Brown move forward as your right tackle?
Oh, you're really entertaining that.
Absolutely. And I don't know how I don't know how anybody that watches this tape from the most impressive win that the Texans have had this year, where they ran the ball really well in the fourth quarter, but effectively in the game, and where they protected the quarterback as good as they have in, hell, 2 years, if we're being honest. I don't know how you watch this film and you don't watch Trent Brown and go, yeah, we need more of that. Yeah, that's what's been missing. I don't know how you do it. Unless you're you watch him at practice and you know that a speed rusher is going to give him
the pass protection makes me nervous.
Well, yeah. No, and look, that's fair, but I'm just like, he did things like Walker. And Walker's not a great pass rusher in this league by any means. But he's a good pass rusher. And when Trent Brown got his hands on him, it was a wrap. I mean, it was over. It like the ability to move mass, the ability to stop rushers in their tracks, he's the only one I've seen do it across the entire offensive line. And does it effortlessly and almost like he's disinterested.
I'm with you. The physicality in the run game, you know, how he can just drive guys down when he gets, his hands on you. Yeah. I'm with you on that. I'm not sold, especially if that means sitting, Tytus Howard down. I hadn't seen enough yet to say, all right, let's throw him in there and he's the every down. Like I left that game thinking, all right, their depth on the offensive line without 62. Their depth on the offensive line is much better than maybe you anticipated. And he was far better than we saw from Cam Robinson.
Yeah. Look, I mean, this is clearly a much deeper conversation. My point is I just don't know how you watch it and you decide Trent Brown is not in your best five offensive linemen. That's where I'm at. And he just happens to play right tackle. Now, you look at it from the Houston Texans lens, you got a right tackle in Tytus Howard that you believe in is really good and has played well, but he also can play guard. And now you've got a guard problem. Let me tell you right now, Juice Scruggs came in for City Sal, but Juice Scruggs is a weak link in that offense. I mean, he is not – he causes problems for the other linemen. Like, he pushes guys into other guys. Juice is struggling.
Who do you think would be the better guard, Patterson or – Tytus Howard.
Well, I think Tytus Howard's more talented.
But to play guard, to go over there and play left guard, who do you think is the better guard?
Because
you were impressed by Patterson this week.
Yeah, no, I thought Patterson played well. But Patterson is a guy that, this is respect. I'm not disrespecting. I mean, Patterson is a, according to NFL standards, a lower ceiling guy that is playing his ass off. Like he is, it is hard. It's difficult for him. And he played well. He's fighting like you want everybody to fight. So I think Tytus would have a higher ceiling. And I think, to your point, you can't set Tytus, obviously. I think it'd be easier for them to say, hey, Jared, come back over here and take a seat. And put Tytus at guard and leave Trent Brown at tackle than it would be to put either of the other two on the bench.
Yeah, I wonder how serious those thoughts are inside the.
Well, line. I don't know how they can't be after watching that film. That's my bigger point. I don't know what the answer is, and I don't know. I'm not saying that they should or shouldn't do anything over the other. I have no idea what the Texans are going to do. I'm just telling you, I don't know how good football, and I don't know how defensive minded, physicality driven, do what I want you to do, do what you're supposed to do, move mass. Type of head coach doesn't watch that film and go, that big sucker right there is going to be part of my offensive line in some way, shape, or form.
All right, coming up, a little 5 o'clock fire as we continue. One of the craziest sports stories has finally come to an end. We'll discuss that. And big news coming out of the division. Somebody out for the year. We'll discuss that coming up next.